Any second now. There we go. Linoleum knife.
Yes, it is.
I didn't do that.
No, that was me.
You did that.
That was me. Yes, for once.
Yeah.
The rare occasion.
I want it not. No. I want it known that when the microphone gets bumped, every single time, it's not always me.
Just almost always you. It is a statistic improbability that it is me. I should go buy a Powerball ticket.
You should.
I should.
I want that money.
This is Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
Yeah. You are Alonzo Duraldi. You are the... What are you?
Film reviews editor.
You're the film reviews editor of The Wrap, and also you are a critic face on What the Flick on YouTube with Ben and Christy and Matt.
Yes. And you are Dave White, movie critic for Movies.com.
Yes.
And contributor to KCRW's Unfictional.
Oh, Wait, that doesn't have anything to do with this.
No, but it's a thing.
And it's been over a year since I've had anything on that show.
Yeah, but they do reruns, and it's all archived on
that. That is true. When they do reruns, I'll hear from people out of the blue.
Yeah.
It's always like on a Friday night. Like, I heard you on the radio. Like, why? How?
And
when did that happen?
And we have apparently collectively become known as the husbands. When we periodically appear on Press Play with Madeline Brand.
Now you're talking about something completely different.
Yes, I know.
You're talking about another show.
Yes.
Where we are film critics.
Yes, a subject leads to another subject, and then the conversation shifts in that way.
Let's turn this thing off.
We are very excited to have with us today.
We have a guest.
Our dear friend and returning guest to the program, please welcome Louis Ritel from...
The last time I was here, we discussed like the Glee movie or something.
Yeah,
God bless.
Really, was it?
Yeah. And now, now it's off the air.
Right. Yes.
That was that long ago.
Yeah. I know. We're overdue in having.
This
you
is
back.
Only your second time here.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh.
By the way, I'm jealous that you referenced like a defunct project of Dave's. Like, I want to be like, and Lewis from Knott's Landing.
Well, it's not defunct. It's just sort of like I'm on that show like annually.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
Formerly of the Backlot.
Yes. Oh, that's. Thank you. Yes.
They still adore me on that show.
Now, I'm forgetting. You're it's HitFix, but you're specifically on.
As in
your site? Isn't there a separate site, or it's a?
Oh,
channel
I mean,
HitFix,
no.
Or?
Generally speaking, just HitFix.com.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Write about movies, sometimes comedy, a lot of. I feel like recently I've written a lot about like. Pictures of famous women and why I think they're great pictures. And there's 10 reasons.
So you're the anti-fashion police.
That's right, yes.
Which E may be calling. You know, they'll need something to put in that slot.
God bless. Fingers crossed.
And Louis Ritel is, of course, one of the great Twitterers of our generation, at Louis Ritel. I was just saying earlier that you are one of the great epigramists of our generation.
I don't know what epigrammists would be doing besides being on Twitter. So, I mean, if there's another forum for them yet, I want them to call me.
It was made to order. You know, that's kind of what I like about that. What are you pointing at, sir?
I'm pointing at the sound thing because he's very close. Have you fixed that?
He's fine.
You're good?
Yeah.
All right. I'm just trying to give you a signal.
Yeah.
A cue. That well, you are just to turn into a conversation.
You're pointing at the soundboard, which could mean louder, quieter. I don't know.
You should hear what I hear.
I'm close to the mic in a Star Is Born way, so apologies.
Not to worry, you're fine.
No, you're fine. I just want to make sure he was paying attention.
It's all good. I'm on it.
All right. I half believe you.
You've never touched a soundboard in your life, so don't tell me.
That is not a true. That is not a true thing.
Okay, you did it KTXT, but you haven't done it here.
I was the music director of that radio station.
And everyone hated you because you made them play awful things.
No, I made them play amazing things, uh-huh. And they were too dumb to know that that was what I was doing. Yeah,
that's your story, and you're sticking to it. One thing that did happen this week that I kind of wanted to get into with Lewis, especially being here, is HBO canceled Looking. after two seasons, and I thought I really like that show. I mean, they're promising a sort of a tie up all the loose ends movie or whatever. But were you a fan or
some of the time? Yeah, the first season I found it. I mean, basically what everyone said, which is like shot on Instagram and a little too sleepy. But at the same time, it's like, nope, we definitely need a show that proves we can be unentertaining. I understand that. And the second season, I really liked. Anytime there were relationship issues, I really liked them on the show. I thought those were pretty tenderly dealt with.
I was down from the beginning because I mean, it was created by Michael Lannon, but one of the executive producers and the guy who directed a lot of the episodes was Andrew Haig, and I had been a huge fan of Weekend, and
I
love the tone of that movie, which is very kind of quiet and conversational and not a lot of big things happening. So I liked seeing that aesthetic applied to a TV show, and I think for a lot of people it's like, why isn't more happening? Where are the plots? Like, why isn't this more like Sex and the City, you know? But I dug it. I was into it, and I really... Yeah, I agree. The relationships of this season was really interesting. It wasn't just the kind of will they or won't they. There were genuine issues at play, you know,
right, yeah.
Regarding, you know, what being with this person means versus what being with that person means or whatever.
My only problems with it that like were continuous were I just don't think Jonathan Groff is that good an actor. And like, I think the thing, and also what's good about that movie Weekend is the people in that movie aren't saying necessarily fascinating things, but like they just seem so real that you like forgive it, or it's compelling. Whereas when Jonathan Groff said it, just felt like line readings to me, or less entertaining than it could be. Yeah.
No, that's true. There is definitely a documentary feel almost to Weekend in terms of the slowness of it and the naturalism of those performances. So I thought Groff was fine. He wasn't my favorite person on the show.
Yeah,
but he didn't take me out of it.
If I had any complaint, this was not enough fake semen.
Yeah. Oh my God. The treat of Weekend. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you know, those shows have to be. I guess the way that HBO and Showtime are set up to go on cable, they can't show any movie harder than an R.
Right.
So their original programming can't be beyond what you would see in an R-rated movie.
Right.
And so that means no boners.
Right.
Right.
So that's, you know...
Weekend was rated R.
Weekend didn't have boners. It just had fake semen.
Fake semen. So yeah. Where was my fake semen?
Well, maybe that would have been season three. Maybe we'll never know.
We will never know. Well, they're going to do a movie, right?
Yeah, maybe the
wrap
movie.
Up. They're going to do the wrap-up movie.
Yes.
I do think it's comical that they're having a wrap-up movie. It's like, is it going to be 11 minutes? Because... will he get the end of that haircut?
Well, I think an issue with that show was that... I think for the kind of storytelling they were doing, you can't do it in half an hour. You know?
No, it should have been an hour long.
Yeah. I mentioned this when we did the... Bibbs and I were recapping the season on What the Flick, and we had Michael Lannon and Daniel Francese come in this week for the finale. And there's this book that came out a couple of years ago called Difficult Men about the sort of current, you know, golden age of TV and how it's all based around characters like Tony Soprano and Walter White and, you know, these sort of complex anti-heroes that are different than what we used to get on TV. And they, at one point, sort of they make the observation that if you're a difficult man, you get an hour. And if you're a difficult woman like Nurse Jackie or like Weeds, you get half an hour.
Oh, wow.
So difficult gay men also half an hour.
Veep, yes, right.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. May I remind you that we are a podcast of the cinema.
Oh, right, sorry.
And not cinematic seeming TV.
Exactly. Y'all want insights on looking? Well, you're not gonna get it. But stay tuned because there's a, you know, that LKTV is coming soon.
Oh yeah. At some point, we're gonna start having
soon and very soon.
We're gonna start having a subscription service where people get extras. One of which will be a separate podcast that we do that's entirely about what we watched on TV that week.
Premium. So.
And we've been getting some very interesting answers on
Tiffany Amber Thiessen's cooking show.
Oh, holler.
Bad Girls Club.
Oh, yes.
You know, the important...
Do you guys ever
The golden age of television.
Just to be clear, I swear to God, I'll let this go. Bad Girls Club is on Oxygen, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever watch the show Snapped?
No, what's that?
It's a show just about, like, women who have snapped, like, serial killers. I'm like, is this the feminist television show of our generation, or is this terribly insulting? I haven't chosen one way or the other.
I know.
Didn't Oprah own a part of Oxygen for a while?
Oh, God.
Before she struck out on her own?
I thought she might have, right?
Yeah. Before, sorry, on her own.
All right, get hard.
Okay, oh, where are we going right now? What I was going to say was several people on our Facebook page have given us suggestions of premiums they would like to see. Yeah, when we go subscription. A lot of tote bag action.
People want tote bags. They want tote bags with yours and my face
yes.
on them. That is a bad idea.
Well, they could get we can get a good, you know, caricaturist maybe. And I don't mean the kind where like you're on a skateboard and I'm skiing.
Oh, now I want that.
No, that's what we do want. I want to be on a skateboard, upright, for the one time in my life, instead of falling down.
Anyway, if you have thoughts on this matter, go check out our Linoleum Knife Facebook page and let us know what goodies would make you want to become a subscriber to this program.
I want a caricaturist where I'm riding a dragon, and have a big sword, machetes and stuff. And
you want to be Hodor, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, yes, get hard.
Now, before we actually talk about the film, let's talk about the junket.
Yes. Lewis got to interview the perpetrators of this film face to face.
You are here this week because you are my hero.
Oh God, it's too bad, frankly.
And here's why you are my hero. Not even because of the question. I want to believe that the follow-up question was intentional.
There might have been some shadiness going on.
Because the follow-up question was the smoothest, sharpest, best stealth shade. What Wendy Williams calls white people shade. This was amazing. And, well, let's just talk
about
what
let's walk him through.
What did you do?
Okay.
What happened?
So,
what have you done?
Right. So I saw Get Hard. There is almost nothing to speak about this movie except for the ways in which it could possibly offend you, I think. Like, the devices in it are so familiar, there's nothing like to discuss, etc. I thought everyone was going to go to this junket where you get 4 minutes to talk to Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell and ask some version of, oh, there's a lot of controversy about this being a little bit racist or homophobic or whatever. I did not go in thinking I would be the one person to ask them, seemingly, from what I've seen, is this homophobic or whatever. So I sat down with them. I threw them a softball question first. They were game. I've interviewed Kevin Hart 3 times this year alone. And I said to them, and I prepared the question ahead of time because I wanted to make sure I got all of it in. And I said, so between the scene where you use a mockingly effeminate voice, Kevin Hart, and the scene where you, Will Ferrell, gag at the sight of a penis as if a gay situation is the worst thing that could happen to a straight person, did you ever think this is a little bit mean-spirited or at the very least dated?
Yeah. Yes.
So they gave me a response that included funny is funny.
Yes.
Right.
Which is simple reflexive property of addition or whatever.
True. But it turns out not funny is not funny. Also.
Right. And so then I follow that question by saying, like, you guys have both played a lot of wonderful asshole characters. What's your favorite asshole character?
Get the time on that.
Oh, sorry.
No. We knew this was going to have to be bleeped. I just wanted him to get the time.
So yeah, then they talked. Will Ferrell talked about the Blades of Glory.
The best. But it was so amazing because they didn't know that you were saying that.
Right.
You know, and I just—it's beautiful.
And it felt pretty appropriate after what they had said, which was, you know, like, let me tell you, clearly gay guy, what we were going for.
Since you obviously missed it.
What I think about these two actors is that they are just actors who took a script and who were convinced on some level that it wasn't going to be this horrifying thing.
Well, it's Ferrell's production company,
right.
Mm-hmm. Gary
right.
Sanchez.
Right. But like, okay, well, in the, just for anyone who's completely out of the loop, this is a film starring Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart. Will Ferrell is a financial exec who has been framed for fraud and he is going to prison. He's being made an example of white collar crime. He's going to a maximum security facility. The guy who washes his car is Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart wants money for a down payment on a house to get his family out of South Central because that's where black people live. This is the minor scenario of the film, of this homophobic film, that it's also quite racist.
Yes. And, gotta get out of Crenshaw because my kid has to go to a school with metal detectors.
Yeah. And so he pretends like he has been to prison. And
even though he's
a squeaky clean family man, and he has never, and he offers Farrell, he offers to coach Farrell on how to be not raped in prison, because that is the one and only thing that either of them thinks of when it comes to prison. You will be raped. So this begins the process of their. And it's a three-stage process of training. Now, this is where spoilers are going to happen. So if you don't want spoilers, you might fast-forward this podcast for another 10 or 15 minutes because we're going to talk about this. The first step is self-defense. He does not do well. Farrell does not do well with self-defense. Hart knows this and thinks, okay, we've got to move on to phase two, where we prepare you to be raped. And what that means is we're going to a gay coffee shop, which is
a brunch place
meant to be like the Abbey at noon on a Wednesday.
Right.
Right.
You know, well, I think Hart's line is thing like it was voted cruisiest brunch spot in L.A.
Okay.
Or no, not even that. Flirtiest brunch in L.A.
Okay.
Not sophisticated enough to bring up cruising.
So they show up. They show up and I can't give you the face that everyone in this place has.
It's the face that goes with, ew!
Basically. Thank you, that was perfect. Because every man looks at Farrell and Hart with, well, hello. Like that kind of thing. And so Kevin Hart says to Will Farrell, you're going to go up to a guy and you're going to ask him for sex. That specific kind of mouth on junk sex. And it'll be easy. And here comes the quote, because that's what they do.
Right, at brunch in particular.
Yes, totally.
That's what they do.
Before the Eggs Benedict arrive.
And so Farrell goes looking for the guy and immediately finds one. It's the guy from Veep.
Yeah, Matt Walsh.
Right.
Yeah. And
off to the restroom stall.
Immediately, because that's what they do. And then begins this moment of like horrifying panic as the junk comes out and the face of Will Ferrell has to smash up into the junk.
Like the public sex joke in Unfinished Business is smarter than this joke.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, Unfinished Business is this gay pride anthem.
Yeah, by comparison, totally. Yeah. Did you see that one?
No.
Oh, the Vince Vaughn movie.
Yeah,
there's a Nick Frost plays this sort of like this some businessy person they're dealing with who is there for like Folsom Europe in Berlin. So he's like he's got this full leather outfit and because you know poor Nick Frost with that body of his can't get arrested at a gay event.
Right.
Please.
The only thing Unfinished Business gets wrong about gay is that it doesn't understand that Nick Frost is a pinup. Yeah, Nick Frost is a pinup for the Bears.
Anyway, so he goes back to where the glory holes are so he can just hide and have his apparently allegedly enormous, junk in sight. And there's this sort of ongoing conversation that's happening with various other people poking their stuff out of the holes, and it's actually kind of funny, and compared to Get Hard, it's enlightened,
Yeah. But so you're not gonna be raped properly because you're a disaster. You're a disaster at gay sex, which as we know is the same thing as rape. So now we have to have protection for you. Because that's the last resort, is protection. So
we get you into a gang.
We go down and get you into a gang in South Central, the gang that is run by T.I.
Who is Kevin Hart's cousin in the movie.
And every other black person besides Kevin Hart and his family in the film is a gang member waving guns in the air. And
bandanas on the head and the whole
thing. And when Will Ferrell shows up and gives them all financial advice, then the film turns into this bizarre thing of like, isn't it cute to watch the black gang members talk about finance? Isn't that
Right.
adorable? Because you,
Like they were adults or something.
yeah, it's like they were grown-ups with brains that they could use and think with, and it's unbelievable the things that go on in this film.
And again, before people have this outcry of, oh, we have no sense of humor, blah, blah, blah. If any of this were funny,
Right.
if any of this were about something, if it were about how straight people respond to the
Right.
idea of gay
Right.
stuff, or if it were about anything, then yes, by all means. I mean, the director of this movie was one of the writers of Tropic Thunder, and that's a movie that I think pushes a lot of interesting buttons about race and other things in a very, and even gay stuff, in a funny and smart way because
Yeah.
it's genuinely transgressive and satirical. And this movie is just ooh pee pee.
In addition, like the two stars of it, like they have both done exact versions of these characters before, so you feel like you're watching like some unfinished script version of something they've done 50,000 times.
Yeah,
Sort of
that's
thing.
sort of kind of based on Trading Places
Yeah.
anyway, you know.
I think the what part of what is true is what you just said. The comedy is completely unfocused. When it is not focused on its very easy targets. And the very easy targets are they. You ought to maybe know better if you're going to go after they in a big
Yeah,
mainstream film.
because if you're not being a satirist, you're just being a bully.
Right. And so this isn't satire, it's actually it's cowardice, because what you have done is you've picked a target that you know you can get away with attacking up to a point, because it's also a very polite movie that thinks it's being offensive. It knows what the limits are. It knows that it can only go to point, B or C
A and a half.
in going after the gays. It can't go D, E, F. You want that, you go back to the 60s and 70s
Right.
where anything goes, when you've got Ryan O'Neal in 1982's Partners
Just watch the trailer,
calling
basically.
John Hurt that F word.
Yeah.
And
Or even like.
that's in the trailer. Like, he's the hero of the
But
movie.
that was because you could actually be bigoted then. But I'm telling you, but if in a more comparable movie, Mel Brooks uses the N-word in Blazing Saddles
Yes.
to effectively point out these are the racist jerks, and then these
Yes.
are not
Right.
the otherwise. You know, this movie doesn't you kind of sort of uses the N-word once, but
Phonetically
phonetically and
struggled
yeah,
through, and
and
yeah.
at Kevin Hart's instigation, the six-letter F-word is certainly never used. Because yeah, you're right. They know their parameters, and so they're playing it safe, and even within playing it safe, they're playing it stupid.
They don't even want to say the word rape too many times, which happens three or four times through the course of the movie. Instead of doing that, they have to come up with all these euphemisms, all of which involve penis. Saying the word penis or some variation on the word penis, and saying the things that people do with penises.
Or anal.
Yeah, or, yeah. And so then, because they have stifled themselves by actually going for the word rape, which is what the entire film is about, they, by virtue of the language they use, they have equated rape with gay
Right.
sexuality.
Which is interesting because
Yeah.
when people have asked me about like or more than once I've seen this, not just on the stuff I've written about Get Hard, but on other articles. Like, I haven't seen the movie yet, but it's not homophobic because we're talking about rape here, but we're talking about rape, not gay sex. And it's like, no, the movie is equating them.
Yes.
So, yes, no, you haven't seen it. I've
Yeah.
seen it.
Right.
They made that connection, not
Right.
me, you
Yeah.
know?
I took the advice of a listener, or a person, or a reader, sorry, someone on Facebook, who, oh gosh, who was it? Laura, I think, one of my Facebook friends. Anyway, she said, "I would advise you to go read the comments on movies.com.
Oh
Just
boy.
this one time, go read the comments."
You learned a lot, I'm sure,
Oh
about
man, this is
yourself
so
first.
great.
Because I did look
Here,
at the,
here's, here it is.
because I looked at the ones on YouTube, and actually they've been mostly like in our camp.
You must be gay.
Nah.
Jeez, stop trying to make a pathetic political stand. What about
existing gay people? Yeah, right.
Yeah. What about movies that make women cheap? Well, I go after those too.
Yeah.
Person who never reads me.
How dare you not fix every single problem if you're going to mention one of them?
Here it goes. A man-on-man or woman-on-woman situation is not natural, no matter how you try to fix it. Mm. That is why you gave it 0 stars. You can't get your emotions straight.
Get Your Emotions Straight was the original name of this movie.
Hooray.
So it's just... really amazing.
What's funny about reviewing this on What the Flick was that there have been a couple times in the past few months where there's been some sort of gay joke in a movie that either Ben or Christy will be like, I thought that was really offensive. And they turn to me and I'm like, no, I thought it was funny or it didn't bother me or whatever, you know. So that actually sort of gave me the cachet on this one to say, no, this movie is actually stupid and is, you know, repellent, you know, because I'm not just knee-jerk offended all the time by everything. You know? But boy, this movie has it coming. It's just shocking that in 2015, it's not even that they should know better. They do know better. These guys, you know they're smarter than this.
I was going to say that, like, among the laziest stuff they do in the movie, look, what's most disappointing is they justify it using, like for instance, like, you say the movie is racist, or, like, every black character who isn't, like, in Kevin Hart's family is, like, a gangbanger. It's like, but they're like, oh, but his wife isn't one. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, like, we can be this terrible, the gay people, because there was this one nice gay guy who was obsessed with Kevin Hart for no reason.
Right.
They think they're being nice to gay people by giving us that character.
Exactly. That character who, by the way, spends the entire rest of the movie trying to convert Kevin Hart into, like, having sex with him.
Right.
Like,
in a from the 60s gay caricature way.
Yes, yes. Like, all but the sweater wrapped around his shoulders kind of thing. It just... Yeesh.
Yeah. And I'll just give another example. In the scene where... Kevin Hart is role-playing three different guys that you will meet in prison.
Which is a potentially funny scene that just doesn't...
Which, really, I will give Hart this. He's got so much...
Energy
and ability to switch off back and forth from this to this to this. And I'm a fan of him. When he becomes the little feminine dude...
Mm-hmm.
Like when you told him about it, suddenly he is embodying the message of the film. That is, when a gay guy is in prison, it's amazing.
Right.
He's in hog heaven.
When a gay guy's in prison, it's great because they're just getting it all the time. To them, this is just what they do. This nonstop rape.
But for straight men, it's a horror show.
And so, as I turned to Ted, I was sitting next to my friend Ted, who's a film critic as well, and I turned to him at the movie. In this scene, I said, what the F am I watching? All I could think of while sitting through it was, this is like I'm going to get you, Elliot Boy, or The Gay Deceivers, or Partners, or Norman Is That You, or any of these films from 35, 40, 45, 50 years ago that we look at now and we go, oh my God.
Some of my best friends are.
Here's the thing I think about Some of My Best Friends Are, though. Some of My Best Friends Are is actually sympathetic. And puts its characters in an unwinnable situation.
I guess, but sympathetic to the point of, oh, these poor people.
Yeah. No. I get it.
You're right. It's not grotesquely caricatured. Yeah.
This is insanity. This is what this is.
Well, and another thing that Kevin Hart said in your interview with him was like, oh, the critics never like blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, no, that's not true, Kevin Hart. You were in About Last Night last year, and you got really good reviews for that.
Also, what could be lazier than being like, well, critics don't like whatever you want to do? I mean, it's just like, what point are you making?
But it's not even true, though. I mean, he's, I think, has benefited from being well reviewed, especially his TV show. Critics love Real House Husbands.
Yeah.
So, to play that card is like, no, you are not Nick Swartzen. You don't get to play that card.
Right.
Also, the one thing that's, like, disturbed me is it seems like there's this army of people who just want to defend Will Ferrell anyway, as if he, like, in the way that I feel like when people talk about Madonna, she is always working back from a deficit of some sort.
Right.
People are always like, he's at the top of the heap. Why are people taking this away from him? You know what I mean? And it's like, that's what I think is the most disturbing thing about this movie, is that he is this very powerful... This movie is going to make a lot of money. And so now, because of this movie, I'm going to, you know, people... Later, I'm going to have to say, you know, to, like, fans of this movie, to, like, I have to make up for this now. I have to defend that the thing you like, that you insist on liking, is harmful, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, and it's... nobody wants to be in the position of being the, like, this is... You know,
right.
Because you
well, here's
think
why.
That it's a sort of, like, knee-jerk kind of lefty whining or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know...
You're crying, you're offended. And to be offended is to have feelings.
Right.
And so I have, in my review, and not once in speaking about this film, have I said that I am offended, because I am not offended, because I no longer have feelings about this. You can't hurt my feelings anymore about this. All you can do is sit down and take a seat and let me tell you why you are an idiot.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but...
Noticing that you suck. Is that the same thing as being offended?
The idea that, like, to bring this stuff at all just automatically means that you're this no-fun wet blanket. It's like, no, sometimes you have to say this stuff because this is happening.
Right.
Then this has been foisted upon the public, and it's our role to be like, no, not okay.
Right. It's garbage.
Yes.
You know what ain't? You know what is not garbage?
What
Do you know what the opposite of garbage is?
What is the opposite of garbage?
Audible.com.
Yay!
You've got this.
Get a name?
Lewis, have you heard of Audible.com?
I have, definitely.
Have you heard the good news about Audible.com?
No.
The Audible.com would like to offer you, Lewis Fertel, and you, our listeners.
All of them.
I'm holding my face like Joan Crawford.
A free audiobook and a free of your choice and a free 30-day trial.
Oh.
Membership.
Yes. Now, if you don't know what Audible is, it is an audiobook
service.
Destination.
Yes.
It is the biggest one of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, I'm looking at my content here. What you do is you download it. And you can play it back on your smartphone. And I think it's funny that you should say smartphone even now, because there's still people like me that don't have smartphones. your tablet, your computer, you can listen to your stuff anywhere.
Yes.
They have over 180,000 titles.
Yes, sir.
And of all the different, you know, genres and stuff that you want.
So, yeah. So many books to choose from, and like I said, a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. All you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/linoleum and sign up.
Make sure you use the /linoleum.
Yes, that's how they know we sent you.
That we are the ones that pushed you there. And you're going to find something you want. There's 180,000 books.
Yes, I don't care how picky you are. You got something you want to hear.
I have decided, even though I said I wasn't going to do this, that even though I finally got my copy, I ordered a copy of Moby Dick,
yes,
the book, because I have to finish reading it for the first time in my life.
Before, which, you got a little dinky paperback. I was surprised. I thought you were...
I like to carry things around to screenings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't like to carry big books around to screenings.
Ah, okay.
It feels ostentatious.
Mm.
And people come up to you when you have a big book, and they're like, oh, what are you reading, egghead? And so then... So I got the little paperback. It's in my pocket. And but I decided that, because I want to finish reading it before the LA Opera does their production of Moby Dick in the fall. I've never read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have 35 years ago.
AP English.
Yeah. Which I totally slid through. But I remember when I was a kid, my first grade teacher read Charlotte's Web to the class.
Mm-hmm.
As I read it on my own. And whether I was behind her or in front of her, it didn't matter, because I was still reading it, and it was reinforcing everything to me and just making me love it more. So I think I'm going to get Moby Dick.
All right.
Provided someone awesome is reading it.
You know what? I bet Moby Dick is one of those books where there's several options.
I'm going to say, there's got to be some Jeremy Irons in there for you.
Yeah, the Fran Drescher Moby Dick.
I want Fran Drescher reading Moby Dick to me. I hope they have it.
We'll look. Audible.com.
So, yes, okay, here's what you get. You get the free audiobook. You get a free 30-day trial membership.
Mm-hmm.
You forgot to say that part.
No, I said that.
Oh, did you say that part?
Yes, twice. Okay.
And you go to audiblepodcast.com/linoleum.
Mm-hmm.
And then when your 30-day free trial membership is up, then you start paying them money. But you're going to want to do that because that's what we're already doing.
Yes, you have the option to bail, but you won't want to because you will have access to so many great audiobooks. I myself have been listening to...
The amount you pay actually gives you credits toward free books.
Right, yeah. So you're not just paying a membership. You're also getting credit toward more books. I'm currently listening to Amy Poehler's Yes, Please... on my smartphone, and it's great. She has she is reading her own stuff, but there's also little guest appearances by so far
Fran Drescher.
No, not Fran Drescher yet, but so far Kathleen Turner and Carol Burnett have popped in. So
that was, hell,
yeah, it's pretty great.
That is shocking.
All right, so do it.
Audiblepodcast.com/linoleum.
You want this
totally. Also opening this week. There's nothing else that you and I both saw, right?
I saw Home.
Okay, tell us about Home.
You did not review it.
I recused myself from reviewing this movie because one of the producers of the film, Suzanne Berge, is married to Judy Weider, my former boss of The Advocate.
My former publisher of Exile and Guyville, the memoir
that was
never best-selling.
I love that damn book, by the way.
Bless you.
Thank you.
But yes, I know. I've known Suzanne for a long time, so I
had no choice but to review this movie.
I did not feel like I could review it, but I've heard really good things. So.
She has... Suzanne and Judy have been in this home at our Christmas parties enjoying treats.
Yes.
I had no choice but to review it.
Mm-hmm.
And I often, when I have to review a movie and there's someone I know involved, I usually say, okay, you know,
full disclosure,
I've met this person or, you know, they've been to my home and they had a cookie, which is basically what they did.
Right.
But I didn't do it this time because I thought, you know what? No one cares if I've met the producer and fed her at a Christmas party.
Yeah, I think the writer, director, actor is a little more direct to me.
Yeah, kind of thing. And so, but anyway, happily, I like this movie.
Oh, good. That's
it is. Yeah, exactly. Because that's the thing. It's like, oh, God, please don't let it be awful. I want it not to have a problem with the person. It is... It's not going to win points for originality in its setup because that's Lilo and Stitch.
Okay.
Lonely little girl meets an alien. They become friends. They become familial, basically. There's an alien that doesn't understand the idea of family. He comes from a species of alien that they're very chilly and sort of, you know, affection embarrasses them.
Mm-hmm.
His name is O, and he's voiced by Jim Parsons. And the reason his name is O is actually a very funny sequence. He's so needy and so happy and so, let's be friends all the time, that all the other aliens, when he approaches them, they all say, oh. So that became his name. And he invites them all to a housewarming party, and no one shows up. You know, the reason he invites them to a housewarming party is because they have invaded Earth.
Ah.
The reason they have invaded Earth is because they are trying to run away from the Gorg, just giant menacing triangle spaceship, evil monster aliens chasing them throughout the galaxy. Every time the Gorg chase them to a new place, they have to get up and run. So they run to Earth, and they move into Earth very quickly. They vacuum up all the human citizens and put them in Australia.
Oh, finally.
Do they all fit in Australia?
Yeah, they do. Okay. Yeah, and they make little houses for them. A giant refugee camp, basically, is Australia. And not once does the movie ask the humans if they mind this or not. The humans are clearly, their faces are like, no! Like, it's like an end-of-the-world film where the aliens come and just vacuum you up and throw you somewhere else. But it's from the point of view of the aliens who are like,
like, well, that's done.
Well, that's finished. Now we can get on to living on Earth, you know. And So they all move into the apartments and homes of all the humans, and O throws a housewarming party, and he sends an Evite that accidentally goes out into the galaxy so that the Gorg can get the Evite.
Oh my god.
And meanwhile, he meets a little girl named Tip. She's voiced by Rihanna. Tip's mother is voiced by Jennifer Lopez, who doesn't really have much to do. It's Rihanna's show. Like, there's no soundtrack. It's all Rihanna songs.
There is one Jennifer Lopez song, though, from what I remember.
At the end, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so then they just become friends, and they have to go find... They have to stop the Evite.
Right.
They have, like, 10 hours or something to stop the Evite from getting to the Gorg, so that the Gorg are going to come to, you know, destroy and attack and, mm-hmm. and make, chase the Boov away.
To get another planet.
To get another planet. Now, there's a spoiler. I'm not going to give it away, because this is a very sweet, funny movie.
And I do want to see it.
It's not an achievement in animation or in storytelling or anything like that. It's just cute, and it's brightly colored, and it's for little kids. It is an animated film for little kids that older kids won't mind being forced to sit through, and adults won't mind having to take their kids, which I think is the best thing you can say for a movie about, for a movie for little children. Mm. That everybody can actually enjoy this film.
All right.
It's charming.
Jim Parsons is an alien. I really believe it. I really do.
This is the other thing. He is totally the MVP of this movie, because he has a voice for cartoons. His voice is for cartoons. He just happens to be on a live television show that I do not watch. But also, the Boov, when they are speaking English on Earth, everything sounds like it comes out of a VCR instruction manual that's been translated into English. So the usage is all wrong and clunky and awkward. And Jim Parsons handles that so smoothly, and it's very funny. I had a good time.
Cool. No, I totally, I want to see it and, you know, support Suzanne. Although, you know, it opened at number one this weekend, so.
She doesn't need our support.
She doesn't need my support. But
I thought that was kind of wild. I was shocked it beat Get Hard.
Yeah, because there wasn't a lot of advance buzz. Yeah. I was a little worried about it, but no, it you know, I guess there's not anything else out for kids right now, and it just they picked the right weekend, and good for them, you know.
Rihanna beat up Will Ferrell. I'm fine with
that. I'm fine with that, too.
You know, poor DreamWorks Animation, you know, it's getting knocked around all the time, and losing the animation Oscar to Big Hero 6, and you know, it's been not a good couple of years for them. So
yeah,
they had some okay news. I saw While We're Young from Noah Baumbach. You know, and I was a huge fan of Francis Ha. That was my favorite film of 2013. This is not as great, but I still liked it a lot. Ben Stiller stars as a documentary filmmaker who has spent the last 10 years trying to make this like 6-hour boring movie about like economy and power and whatnot that he just can't get anywhere with. And he's married to Naomi Watts, and she's a documentary producer for her much more successful documentary filmmaker father, played by Charles Grodin. They're kind of feeling like they're in a rut because they've chosen not to have kids, and they keep saying they're okay with that. You know, it's like, we can fly off to Paris at a moment's notice. I mean, not that we would, because, you know, we're really busy and, you know, we can't afford it, but we could, you know, that sort of thing. And so they're growing estranged from their best friends who have just become parents and are totally locked into that mindset. One day at an extension class that Stiller's character is teaching, Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried show up. Driver is himself an aspiring doc filmmaker. They live in Bensonhurst. You know, they are like classic sort of modern era hipsters, basically, in the way that word...
Boy, do I
hate
that word.
In the way that word has come to be used of late. You know, they have a live chicken in their apartment, and they have a ton of VHS cassettes and LPs and stuff like that, you know.
We have those things. We don't have a chicken, but...
We have a few VHS cassettes and a few.
We have like 100. We have like 100 VHS cassettes.
Naomi Watts has a great line. She goes, "It's like they've got everything we ever threw out, but it looks good the way they arrange it."
Oh, that's pretty good. That's a good line.
So they start hanging out with the young kids, you know, and which it leads to some embarrassing moments. You know, Ben Stiller buys a fedora. Ben Stiller gets a bicycle and then discovers that he has
Why does he buy a fedora?
Because Adam Driver talks him into it.
Imagine Ben Stiller not... Did you say Ben Affleck?
Ben Sorry. Stiller.
Oh, Ben Stiller. I was like, imagine him not buying a fedora.
Why does Adam Driver have a fedora?
Because this is the brand of Brooklynites that wear the hats, you know. They should have given Adam Driver a big unruly...
Well, then he's not that cool because fedoras aren't cool.
They should have given him a big unruly beard while they were at it. You know, Ben Stiller discovers he has arthritis in his knees, and he keeps, like, asking the doctor, like, what, like, some special kind of arthritis? Thinking, like, you know, surely I can't have regular arthritis, that's for old people. And the doctor's like, no, it's, that happens.
It's like my brother got diagnosed for diabetes, and I was like, oh no, I'm next. And then I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe there's a good kind of diabetes. What's the good diabetes? What's the good diabetes?
Diabetes plus.
Diabetes. Anyway, so as this friendship with the young people starts sort of estranging them from the people their own age, then Ben Stiller starts to realize that maybe Adam Driver isn't quite as on the up and up as he originally thought, either as a friend or as a filmmaker. So it's very much, you know, one of those The Youth Will Bury Us movies, but Baumbach is very smart in that he opens the film with just the text, but a scene from Ibsen's The Master Builder.
Oh my God.
So it's like, you know, this is not a new phenomenon. You know, in the late 19th century, people were nervous about the younger generation and being usurped by them, you know. It's very funny. I like this movie a lot. It kind of has a... It takes a turn in the third act that's not a very smart one, in that it changes tone in a way that's a little awkward, and Stiller has this big speech that sort of underscores everything that we've already gotten from the movie if we were paying attention. You know, mm-hmm. I hate when filmmakers do that. Like, suddenly it's the, you know, classroom, you know, discussion notes for an episode of Degrassi where they have to go back over everything and tell you what to talk about or whatever. But it doesn't make any mistakes that outweigh the good stuff. So it's definitely worth seeing. It's very smart. It's funny. You know, the characters are all, they are likable and despicable in different ways and in interesting ways.
What is Grodin giving us? I need to know.
Not enough Grodin. But he's very dry. He's very funny. You know, he's dry. He's Grodin. It's, you know, he has a couple of choice scenes with Stiller where he sort of delivers some awkward truths.
Okay.
I would have liked to have seen more of him, but he's good. And Naomi Watts is really funny, which she doesn't get a lot of chances to be. I thought she was very funny in Movie 43, but I'm one of the four partisans of that film on Earth, I think. And Adam Driver, you know, he really kind of rides that line of, you know, kind of making the character, you know, like showing us what's appealing about the character and also what's disgusting about the character, you know. But it didn't feel like Gen Xer scolds millennials, because I feel like there's enough affection and disdain for both generations to go around in this movie, and so that's what's kind of cool.
That's all the movies. DVD picks.
Well, actually, hang on.
What's the one, the Al Pacino movie?
Yes, Danny Collins, because I forgot to talk about it last week, and since Lewis has actually seen it, we can discuss it. Al Pacino plays a sort of semi-washed-up, you know, kind of parody of himself rocker who's been, you know, singing the same old hits for ages, and he's drugged up and boozy and engaged to a woman way too young for him, and for his birthday, his manager, played by Christopher Plummer, gives him this letter from John Lennon that had never gotten to him, that was sent to this magazine where he'd done an interview early in his career, worrying that, like, he wouldn't be able to balance his artistic integrity with making a lot of money. And John Lennon was basically saying, sure, you can. You should call me and we'll talk. And, you know, he realizes that that letter could have changed everything. And so he tries to sort of make some changes in his life aesthetically and personally. And it leads him to New Jersey, where, you know, he has encounters with Annette Bening and Bobby Cannavale and Jennifer Garner. I like all the two-person scenes.
Yeah.
Where it's like Pacino and somebody. Like, they're all really fun to watch, and he's giving an interesting performance. And I didn't ever buy him as a rocker. That scene where he's on stage at the Greek, I was like, oh.
Also,
no.
I mean, like, how old is that character actually? Because Al Pacino is like 75,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think it's his 60th birthday.
Yeah, okay.
And I was
yeah.
thinking, like, yeah, you're pushing it. You know, what's funny is that the movie is kind of self-critiquing because, like, ultimately, like, Danny Collins makes this effort to write a song with actual integrity and not, you know, the sort of crap that he later was doing in his career. And then when he, like, has a performance where he's going to finally do it, as soon as he gets on stage, he chickens out and goes back to the old crap material that the crowd wants to hear.
Right.
And I feel like that's what the movie does, too. The movie sort of flirts with the idea of a darker character study or, you know, something that's a little less audience friendly and huggable, but then boy, as soon as it has the opportunity, it goes right back to the schmaltz.
Yeah, it's mostly just a cute movie. Yeah.
It is fatally cute.
Yes. I mean, I will say, like, I mean, it's hard to sort of champion Al Pacino nowadays. He's just not somebody who makes things that matter. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
So, but in this movie, it's like, for what it is, he is particularly charming. I like watching him with, like, Annette Bening, even with Bobby Cannavale, who was frightening in certain scenes. In a good way, I love him.
Oh, well, sure, okay. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But, no, but because of that, because the movie doesn't end up taking any real chances, it feels very slight. It's a very
yes.
slight movie.
It's weird because, like, I've read positive reviews of this movie that I mostly agree with. It's just, it basically, I think, kind of boils down to how generous you're feeling about it.
Yeah.
And I was sort of, my thing was, well, you know, there's stuff here that I like and moments that are great, but just overall kind of left me with this feeling of this is kind of...
Yeah, it's like sleepy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a crock.
And that's good, too. Obviously.
She is? Yeah. No, she's great. And I will say, Pacino's really good in this movie called Manglehorn that David Gordon Green did that I saw at Venice last year. It just had its U.S. premiere at South by Southwest, so I guess it's going to open before the end of the year. And it's a really subdued performance from him, you know. Like, David Gordon Green, I think at the time I was saying, he's sort of he's the go-to guy for Over Actors Anonymous, because he did that Nicolas Cage movie last year, Joe.
Oh, right.
That also, like, the movie had its problems, but Cage was really good and really, like, not doing the Nicolas Cage shtick of late. So, you know, that was pretty groovy. Yes, DVD picks. What do you got?
This doesn't come out for 2 more weeks, but I don't care.
Oh, don't do it yet then.
2 weeks. No, no. You'll prepare yourselves. You're going to want to see this if you can. Here's what you need to do. You need to go find a friend who has a giant screen 3D television.
We all have that friend.
We actually
we
do.
We do.
I bet.
I knew what
you
were going to say.
Because Goodbye to Language is coming out on DVD, on Blu-ray.
Yes.
There's going to be a 2D version on the disc.
Kind of defeats the purpose.
But you don't want the 2D. You want to go make friends with somebody who's got a big, giant screen 3D television. And you want to watch this movie in 3D. Because it will hurt your eyes.
it's an assaultive movie, in a good way.
I wouldn't call it assaultive.
Visually.
That's Enter the Void.
Well, okay, but it's...
Which is not a 3D film, but it might as well have been.
It's as though somebody gave Godard a list of, here's things you shouldn't do in a 3D movie, and he was like, check, 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 check.
Oh, wow,
I mean,
scary.
Just down to there being scenes where, like, a woman... I watched a bit of this at our friend's house, who has a 3D TV, Dave's, and there's a woman who's sort of standing kind of in, like, two-thirds profile, and her jacket has kind of a collar with, like, a little, you know, there's, like, a drawstring or whatever, and she's standing at just this angle where the drawstring is coming out towards the camera, and
yeah.
It's disconcerting. It's like, please turn 5 centimeters. I can't take it.
Traumatized by a drawstring. That's some filmmaking.
Well, yeah, because it's super close. Like, just all these things where, like there's a boat approaching a harbor, but in the foreground is one of the sort of, like, those logs, you know, that are...
Oh, God.
And it's just... It sounds stupid when I describe it, but when you see it, you're like, oh, that's not supposed to happen. Like, people who make 3D movies know that you don't do this, and you're doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
You know?
He does a lot of things on purpose.
Yes.
Jean-Luc Godard.
He does.
It's 70 minutes long. It is astounding. And I've seen it twice on a screen.
Uh-huh.
But I'm going to watch it again on Blu-ray at the home of the friend with the 3D television.
Right.
We have an advanced copy, which is why I was already
Yeah, that's how I saw a few bits of it over there.
But April 14th.
Okay.
No, 2 weeks is fine. People don't listen to this.
Oh, all right.
Some people.
And you can pre-order it now.
Yeah.
By the way, we put these Amazon links on the Facebook page. And if you click on them, even if you don't buy the thing, but if that's just sort of your portal to get into Amazon, I think we get some kickback out of that.
So we do.
When you go shopping on Amazon, go to our Facebook page first and click on an Amazon thing.
For a minute there, like it seemed like everybody listening to this show was buying stuff on Amazon through our clicks, through our links.
We had a pretty good Christmas.
And we... And suddenly, out of the blue, we had all this Amazon credit. We bought a case of Metamucil.
You this guy has been a success.
Because guys, like the characters in WoW, we're young. We're getting old.
You guys have been so great.
You're subsidizing our fiber needs.
You guys and your clicks on Amazon and the things you bought through our links, you provided us with a 2015 of colonic health.
Yes.
We'd love you.
Much obliged. The reason that I went over to our friend's house with a 3D TV was the Kiss Me Kate just came out on Blu-ray in 3D, which I'd never... I had seen House of Wax and I had seen Dial-In for Murder in 3D, but I'd never seen Kiss Me Kate. It's pretty great.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and
this is from, like, the late 40s, right?
50s.
50s, okay. The musical is from the 40s.
The funny thing about the 3D revolution, like, of the 50s, it all happened in about 9 months. Like, if you go back and look at IMDb, these movies were all released during this very finite chunk of time, and then 3D just died.
Like 1954?
Yeah, I think in that neighborhood, yeah. But it came and went so fast, it's staggering. Mm. But anyway, so the 3D Kiss Me Kate is pretty great, but that's not my DVD pick. Actually, Dave previously mentioned I'm Coming to Get You, Elliot Boy, which is released on DVD as Caged Men.
Yes.
From Code Red DVD, and it actually has a commentary track recorded by Dave and me. And it's a terrible movie, but you know what?
And so is our commentary track.
But it is a movie about prison rape that is about prison rape. It's not trying to pretend that it's anything else. So it's horribly dated and really dopey, but it's an entertaining watch.
Delicious.
Or
Lewis, you want to throw something in?
Is this coming out a week from now? We've discussed this movie. How to Beat the High Cost of Living is coming out
from Olive
with Jane Curtin and Susan St. James, who would later be Kate and Allie, and right. Jessica Lange.
Yes. All three of them.
Yeah.
I popped that one in. I get a kick out of that film.
Also, it's just that late 70s time where it's like, you know what, Jane Curtin, you try a movie and be on Saturday Night Live. You know what I mean? That, like, nervy, like, I get to, you know. Yeah, I'm obsessed with Jane Curtin. So.
It was 1980. Yeah, this is definitely, I think, her apex in a lot of ways of It's a fun film. It's apparently I was reading the wiki page. It was the script that everybody wanted to do, but they couldn't, like, all the big name actresses that they were approaching to do it wouldn't do it with any other big name actresses.
Oh, amazing!
Like, you know, there was not the sort of female star ensemble comedy mindset. But yeah, Susan St. James and Jane Curtin and Jessica Lange are all really fun together, and it's. It's that period of Sam Arkoff, like, you know, there was a couple of years before Up the Creek. They actually, you know, put out some comedies that were pretty smart. And I'm a sucker for the Earl Klug jazz score. I don't know. I like that movie a lot. It's a childhood favorite.
I'm going to blast through these letters in about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Dear Morocco Mole.
No one's called me that in a while.
Not in a while. And sex happening. That's me. After listening to the podcast from 2 weeks ago, in which you plug not only Audible, but also The Disaster Artist by Greg Sestero, I decided to give both of them a try. Oh, so this person obeyed us.
Nice.
And went to Audible. I blitzed through The Disaster Artist in a weekend, listening to it constantly as I did various household chores and even while I played video games. Sestero's spot-on imitation of Tommy Wiseau makes the book laugh out loud funny to listen to. I can't imagine how much one loses by merely reading the book. I fully support the idea of subscription-based content because it would give me an excuse to give you guys more money. I like that idea a lot. For Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, I suggest that y'all take turns doing commentary for films that one of you really loves. Like... For example, Dave, something from Bela Tarr, Alonzo Lubitsch. so we can hear what the fuss is all about from the horse's mouths, so to speak. That said, I understand that both of you appreciate Tar and Lubitsch. These were mere suggestions. Thanks, a bundle.
You're welcome, a bundle.
That's from Timmy in Connecticut. Dear Linoleum Knife Cast, crew, and craft services. I'm craft services.
We are all of the above.
I have enjoyed your podcast ever since Alonzo began name-dropping it during What the Flick. So good move on that one.
All right.
Another show about the cinema that involves Alonzo. Maybe I have a hidden crush on Alonzo. The world may never know. Mm. He has a crush on you, whoever this person is.
I was thinking it was...
It's a dude,
right? It was on the table, yeah. But, you know.
Back from business as usual, home wrecking, I have a simple question. Have you both knifed each other's lists? Like, have we ever done a top 10 list where you knifed mine and I knifed yours?
We have not, because
I've never made
a top 10 list in a while. I think the last time I got asked to do one of those was for, remember Popcorn Q?
Yeah.
They asked me to do one.
Top 10 gay list, though, probably.
No, I think it was just a top 10 list in general, yeah. But it's been a while. I haven't, yeah. The thing is, like, you know, my top 10 list today is not the same that I would come up with in 2 days, you know. It's all
right, like Sight and Sound, it changes every year.
Exactly.
You probably did or announced that you won't in a previous podcast. We probably said we would never do it.
Maybe, I don't know.
Why don't we do it?
I'm game if you
want. Let's do it. I'll do it.
All right.
I'll do it. I may have had a whole other, philosophical reason not to back in the day, but who cares?
I suspect that we'll get a lot of, I haven't seen this one, but all right.
keep up the fantastic work, and that includes you, Dave. In good humor, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
P.S. I'm a 21-year-old gay college student, and people around my age still say, pour the tea, Dave. It makes me laugh even more when I hear it now.
See? I made a reference to pour the tea, and Dave was treating me like I was Wayland Flowers or something.
I mean, I'm happy to treat you that way, but no.
But, you know, for different reasons.
You're right.
This is from Bjorn, and the entire letter is tote bags with your faces on them.
Okay, that's to the point.
This is from Douglas. Cooking with Dave White. That's his idea. Dave makes a dish from one of his many cookbooks or bakes something that he will not share with Alonzo.
No, okay, I'm not down with that.
Hey, Alonzo. Hey, Mr. Rough Voice. Oops, I mean Dave. I was wondering, I know Alonzo is a member of LAFCA, and I wanted to know how he got in there.
I joined Los Angeles Film Critics Association back when it was a lot easier to get in. Before the internet, before there were a gajillion outlets, I actually got in when I was writing for a bar rag called Planet Homo.
Oh.
Yes.
I love that planet.
Oh, I know. I would live there. yeah, so I'm sure if you go to LAFCA.net, they explain the process. You submit clips, and you know, it's a complicated process where there's like a committee that reads the clips and sort of picks the ones they think are worth voting on, and then the group at large votes on them, and that's generally how critics groups work.
It used to be a lot easier to get.
Yes, like I said, I got in when it was less competitive. But once you're jumped in, you're in for life.
He continues by saying he wants to know because I'm a film reviewer. And I wanted to expand my craft by becoming a member of a specific critic group.
Yeah, it's not going to do anything for your craft.
So what advice can you give me about getting into film critic groups?
Well, you know, obviously...
Don't do it!
No.
That's my advice.
Yeah, because you're riding on my screener coattails. You got it made.
And that's the only reason to get even near someone who's in a critic group.
Yeah, you're the big winner here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know he gets all the perks and never has to go to any of the meetings. You know, it obviously depends on where you live. Like LA Film Critics, for instance, it's about being a resident, not so much where your outlet is. Like Joe Morgenstern writes for the Wall Street Journal, but he lives in LA, so he's a member of LA Film Critics. Whereas people who write for Variety but live in other cities, even though Variety is based here, are not. So wherever it is that you live, letter writer, that's where you would start. If you are an online critic, obviously there's the online film critics now, and there's like broadcast, which I think includes online. I don't know. So it's a matter of, you know, where you are, who you write for, and then just sort of, you know, all these organizations have websites, and I'm assuming the website somewhere would say, here's how you join.
That's from Bartholomew.
All right.
I like that name.
Cubbins?
Jackson.
Okay.
Bartholomew Jackson. That's a great name.
That's a wonderful.
That is.
Dear David Alonso, I would pay a significant amount of money to listen to Dave talk about watching Bad Girls Club.
Do you watch Bad Girls?
Just saying. This is from Jerry. I have watched the clips of it on The Soup.
Yeah, that's watch, yeah. Okay. That's as far as I've gotten to.
Dear David Alonso, you make me smile, even on the shittiest of days.
Oh.
That's from Chuck.
Thanks, Chuck.
Do you ever notice when people say things like that, like you get a Facebook comment, they're like, oh, that made me smile. What could be creepier? Picture someone at the, like they're like Grinch.
Yeah. Slowly curling around in the corner. Front, yeah.
The Joker. You know.
Dear David Alonso, I'm stoked to hear that you guys are considering new premium content. It's funny you brought this up in the March 22nd episode, because earlier in that same show, I was thinking about how I would rather pay you guys to just tell me already what the big reveal to come in the Divergent series is than to have to sit through them myself. It's often the case that when you guys are forced to review a garbage movie, that I would rather you lay it all bare for a proper shellacking. Similarly, in the case of better films, I'd love to hear more discussions of final acts and endings that you wouldn't want to spoil for those that you haven't seen yet. So what about if you did a spoiler edition of the show?
That's not a bad idea.
That is not a bad idea. Turn down your device for 10 seconds. I'll tell you what happens in the next Divergent films.
Okay, go.
3, 2, 1, turn it down. She dies!
And we're back.
Boy, I cannot wait for that to happen in the Divergent movie.
Yeah.
Whatever you end up doing, please be prepared to take my money. Sincerely, Christopher. All P.S. Right. If the Rotten Tomatoes podcast hasn't come up with Spoiled Rotten yet, please tell Matt that he can have the name for $5 American. What does that mean?
I think for the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, they could call themselves Spoiled Rotten.
Oh, would they just call it the Rotten Tomatoes Show podcast, don't they?
Okay. Or the Rotten Tomatoes podcast.
Spoiled Rotten is, that's gold. It's good for that guy.
I don't mind that at all. Yeah.
That's like, that'd be like the special annual award to give to like Nick Swartzen.
The end. We're done.
Oh, okay. As always, real quick, just want to have you check out our friends out there in the world. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Check out the B-Movies podcast, which I guested on this week.
Oh, yeah.
Bibbs is off in Seattle for Emerald City Con, so I sat in with Whitney and Scott Mance from Access Hollywood, and we had a lovely time talking about stuff. Check out Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Schmoes Know podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, Film Spotting SVU, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid, and of course the Brett Easton Ellis podcast. Thanks to Blue for our wonderful theme music. You can find him at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. If you want to get the Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes, where we go in depth on movies, our most recent one is the Poseidon Adventure, but we've also done Clue and Josie and the Pussycats and Two for the Road and The Apple.
Ooh, you know who I want to read Moby Dick to me?
Ernest Borgnine.
Leslie Ann Warren.
You know you're saying words that are very special to me.
She would be great.
She would.
I mean, we can't have Madeline Kahn anymore.
Now, would you, in the Victor Victoria voice or in like just a regular
just her voice?
With her, like, husky, cultish energy.
Yeah.
Call me Ishmael. anyway, for any of those episodes, you can PayPal us $1.99 each at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Include your email address and we'll send it right out to you.
You know what else? Wouldn't it be great if Audible had the Clue novelization that I gave him for Christmas?
Oh, my God.
I will let you touch it before you leave.
Yeah, Jesus.
It's got the fourth ending and everything.
Oh, right, which is crazy.
Yes, yeah, it's bananas. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, so linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can PayPal us $1.99 for those episodes. Subscribe to this program for free at iTunes. We got some lovely new reviews up in there also.
If you,
one guy who said that we were the Moonquake Lake of podcasts.
I like that.
And then there was another one that I should have in front of me because it was lovely. But if you go to our iTunes page, you can read them. And yeah, the more good reviews we get, the better placement we get on their page and people will find us. You can also stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com and leave us a little thumbs up there. Like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Also join the Linoleum Knife group page where our listeners talk to each other about movies. And subscribe to our YouTube channel where I've been posting some of our oldest episodes as YouTube files. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. And again, it's LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. Lewis, where can people find you online?
I write every day at hitfix.com. I'm on Twitter, and coming very soon, I think I'm getting into the podcast world as part of Hitfix. So anyway,
oh, nice.
Oh, cool. Well, have me on in December. I'm always ready to talk about Christmas movies.
Okay. Oh, love it. Absolutely.
At Lewis Virtel, LouisVirtel. Seriously, if you are not following Lewis on Twitter, I don't know why you're on that service at all.
And also start paying attention because the name Lewis is such a dead name now. No one knows what Lewis is anymore. It's Louis or whatever.
Well, you know? Isn't there a One Direction that's Lewis?
He's kind of bringing it back, but I'm telling you, Louis C.K. has torpedoed me in a big way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right, because that was everyone thinks the name is pronounced now.
Right. Well, we reclaim it.
Thank you. Today.
Our friend Gary is really upset about all these news stories about how the name Gary is dying, apparently.
Oh. Like, even the Brits aren't using it anymore. Nearing extinction, yeah.
Like, there were only 43 Garys born last year or something.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's shocking.
Oh, that's scandal.
So it's gonna have a Hazel-type renaissance at some point, I think. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. Anyway, Lewis, thank you for coming on the show. We always love having you, and we need to have you on more frequently. And so shame on us for not having done so, but good to see you as always.
Thank you for being David Alonso forever and ever.
So thank you for listening. We will be back next week. audiblepodcast.com/linoleum.
Goodbye.